Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton. And in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
How you doing, Stone?
I am doing well. Getting very excited about another segment brought to us by the Coles College of Business Executive MBA Program. I want to give a shout out to those guys for sponsoring us. And a little bit of a heads up, they're going to have their very own show in the coming weeks.
That's right. They're in the pilot phase. See how they do.
That's going to be fun stuff. So I got to get the eclipse report, man. What happened over the weekend? Get us all caught up on the eclipse.
Well, you know, in Business Radio X, we're big believers in going where the action is.
Of course.
So I sent our crack reporting team out to New Mexico or Colorado, I forgot which, somewhere in the middle of the country.
Once you get on that side of Mississippi, it doesn't really matter.
And they are out hunting the eclipse, and they found it. And they had some wonderful photographs of it.
Awesome.
Yes, I sent my son, who's 14, out there, and he went with a neighbor, and they got to see the eclipse last night. They were extremely fired up.
Well, I believe with all my heart that all shows leading up today are going to be eclipsed by the segment that we're going to have to do. No, a little bit later in the program, we are going to hear from a return guest, a gentleman who is an author and has released his book, Stand in the Heat. We're going to hear from Glenn Carver. But first up on High Velocity Radio Show this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the Grand Poobah of Egg Planter LLC and his marketing coordinator. So welcome to the show, Jason Dyer and Anita Fong.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
We are delighted to have you. Let's start with you, Jason. Give us a little bit of a feel, if you would. What is Egg Planter all about? What you guys out there doing for folks?
Well, basically, we're trying to create really user-friendly software tools for attorneys. And right now, their technology isn't so good. It's about 20 years behind, and we're trying to accelerate it. And we focus on great usability.
So why do they need technology? What does a lawyer use technology for? Research? Is that the big play?
Well, yeah. I mean, research is important, too. But right now, pretty much every law firm depends on practice management software. And so you can't run an economical law practice without it now. But the problem is, it's enterprise-level technology. It's really expensive. It's difficult to use, and it takes a week to learn. So our proposition is, hey, let's make it simple so you can actually practice law.
And then who are the actual attorneys using this, or the administrators for the attorney's firm?
It's friendly for everyone.
So,
yeah.
Like, what are some of the things that the attorney would use in this system?
Case evaluation, making referrals of certain clients that you either can't take or don't fit into your practice area. And sending it to other attorneys.
Now, do you have a legal background?
Yeah, I have a Juris Doctor.
Does that mean you have a legal background?
Yeah.
Is that code for I'm a lawyer?
I'm not a lawyer. I went straight into technology.
So is there more money in this piece of it than there is in actually trying the cases?
Yes.
So you went to law school. Let me get this. I want to recap here of your career. You went to law school. And you thought at some point you were going to be a lawyer, or you knew you were going to bail at the last second?
No, I mean, I started out. Law is interesting. It's an interesting subject. And, you know, law school is quite challenging.
Right.
But I became more and more fascinated with entrepreneurs. The more I interacted with them, the more I started to realize that, you know, these are great people.
Right.
And I kind of looked back on my own life, and I was thinking, like, you know, I did a multi-unit lemonade stand in fourth grade. I almost got kicked out of school because I sold too much candy on the playground.
Right.
So I realized, you know, I've got more of a core entrepreneur personality than a lawyer. A lawyer, they're great people, but they would think, you know, I shouldn't do this. This is a risk.
Right.
That's not me.
You go the other way.
So you sat down, stayed up late at night, ate bags of Cheetos and wrote this code, or you found people to help you write the code and assembled a team. Walk us through the birth of this thing called Egg Planter, and while you're at it, tell us why you call it Egg Planter.
Yeah, we wonder that too. Basically, we started with some core ideas and principles for products, and we figured, okay, well, look, these are just kind of like little embryos, basically, and we wanted to see which ones would actually grow and create a great product, and we got them. And plus, I actually studied in Italy for a while, so I ate way too much eggplant, so it was on my mind. And, you know, we're startups, so we can have bizarre names.
So tell us a little bit about that whole world. You know, we've started bouncing around in that world a little bit. We've done a remote broadcast at Startup Lounge, Startup Riot. We've gotten to know a few of those folks, and it's a fun, energetic group. But we're not, we're a little further along in our, well, I found Lee a little further along and just jumped on his coattails. So not truly a startup, but we're kind of in that world. But give us some perspective from your vantage point. What's it like being a startup
Especially at the ATDC.
Especially at ATDC, yeah. Give us a feel for that.
Well, all right. Well, I'll start kind of when I started charting out Case Current. That's our product. I spent about 6 months building the kind of the system, thinking about how all the pieces fit together and doing all the market research.
That was before ATDC?
Yeah. Then I got crazy enough and I just kind of walked into ATDC and said, hey, I want space. So we were able to get in. But in that environment, everyone is an A player. Everyone is extremely high energy. Most of us are only kind of like normal energy levels because we don't sleep. I got up at 4. I've been getting up at 4 for the last 2.5 years.
Right.
But it's high energy, very smart people, and it's extremely collaborative. And the talent they have there to mentor you is out of this world.
So how often do you use the mentors and the entrepreneurs in residence? How often do you schedule time with them?
As often as it'll take me.
Really?
Yeah.
So what are some of the trends in technology in the legal world? What are some things that are happening and some changes that are taking place?
Well, it's really cool. Right now, it's like the age of information and law's caught up with that. So you've got legal research, and that's been along there with LexisNexis and Westlaw for a while. But firms are now figuring out how to use big data, like these massive amounts of data that a corporation generates that gets discovered during litigation.
Well, you know, in the movies, I see where somebody asks for, I'm going to use the wrong words here, but discovery or something, and then they back up this big semi-truck full of paper and dump it on them. Does that happen in real life, and then the lawyers have to wade through all that stuff?
It used to. And it's not even just like a semi-truck of paper, it's warehouses full, and now it's digital. And right now, some really great hackers have figured out how to extract all that information and analyze it and sell it. So that's a big trend right now. Cloud computing is the other big trend. And believe it or not, lawyers are slowly but surely becoming paperless. So it's more or less an all digital practice now.
Now, but I would think that one of the negatives of it being all digital is that they can access the speed a lot faster than they could before. So their billable hours would go down.
Yeah. That's kind of one of the macro trends that's happening in the industry. You've got technology that's disrupting. So you don't have to have, say, 20 associate attorneys to go through that data when an algorithm can sort it in 1 hour.
Right, like you can just do a Google search or whatever within their thing. You can do a search, and then it'll just give you what you're looking for instead of having a human being
read
through paper.
And on the other side of the coin, you've got companies like LegalZoom, and they've taken the form practice and taken away from attorneys too. So the profession is trying to regroup, and it's trying to figure out where it's going to go. And people are realizing that it's about really, really good client service, solving problems, and being a counselor instead of a no person. And that model is starting to pick up.
And you're seeing more of that?
Yes.
So we'll be seeing a lot of kind of leather chairs on eBay and kind of cherry wood furniture.
Yeah, plenty. They'll keep the cigars, though.
I've always wanted one of those bookcases that has the glass in the front. I think they're actually called barrister bookcases, so maybe I'll get a good deal on that. So let's bring the marketing person into this conversation if we could. Anita, don't let that microphone whip you. Get right in there with it. Tell us a little bit about, I mean, do lawyers look at you like you're from the planet Mars when you start talking to them about this technology? Tell us a little bit about...
Are they marketing friendly?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're there to learn new stuff. They're very, actually, attorneys right now, they're very open for new technology, especially technology that actually help them make their life easier and, you know, potentially help them make money easier. So, you know, it's just a conversation. They're a lot of them are actually very open-minded. And for Egg Planner, our technology, we focus on, you know, whether it is, we focus on ethical. Our software, our technology, and our business model has to be ethical because that's, you know, lawyers, they have to do everything by the, you know, the
So rules. You just cut your market of lawyers in half.
Right,
know?
So that limits mm-hmm.
That's okay. Not true.
But their checks will probably clear.
No. And, you know, we focus on the usability. The design has to be very intuitive. So it, you know, it will help them. They don't have to spend so much time to learn how to use the software. So if they know that, you know, it's a, you know, simple, easy to use software, and it will potentially help them make money, make their life much easier, you know.
So then they're open to it.
They're so open to it.
Now, who's your person in the firm that you go after? Is it an actual lawyer, or is it kind of the administrator in charge of the lawyers? Like, how do you kind of go in there and work into the law firm?
Well, I mean, We talk to the end user, so that including admin and actual small firms attorneys, because you know they do a lot of things on their own.
Right.
They don't have a lot of staff to help them do stuff. So, you know, just attorneys.
So,
and
what's
admin.
The sweet spot for the size of the law firm you guys work with? Like any size?
Usually about 10 attorneys.
So, yeah. If they have 10 attorneys at that point, do they have somebody that's kind of managing them, or are you dealing with 10 individual attorneys?
Usually for a smaller firm, there's if they break into practice groups, each practice group kind of has its leader,
right.
But it's a partnership type of business. So it's usually attorneys managing a smaller team of their administrative staff.
Uh-huh. But the person that works with this primarily is the administrative staff or the actual attorney?
I think for later iterations of Case Current, it's going to become more open to paralegals.
Right.
It is now, but we might want to bring in those features so they can integrate it fully, which is practice management. So it's right now it's more lawyer-focused.
Well, that's great, though, too. It looks like you could meet some real needs for the paralegals going forward. So in just getting on these people, right, are they hard to get time with? Or do you just pick up the phone and they say, yeah, cool, come on over and let's talk it through?
Because we love trying new technology.
I mean, is that a little bit of a challenge?
Well, yeah, marketing to lawyers is a challenge. Selling to them is a challenge because it's an industry that, you know, until recently hasn't embraced technology.
Right.
You know, lawyers are risk-averse people. And if they see an interface, and the reason our interfaces are pared down is they see a feature and they do a risk benefit analysis. Like if
on
if
every
I,
feature.
Yeah, yeah, because that's built.
These are not clicky people. Right. They don't click all the time.
No. And I mean, you learn that your first week of law school because uh-huh. you're going to get called by your professor. He's going to steamroller you on any assumption you make. So you're just not going to engage things that you don't quite understand.
You must
yet.
Have gone nuts in law school.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So Anita, these guys are hard to, and ladies are hard to get in front of. So what's your secret? How do you get in front of them?
Maybe that's my secret.
It's going to stay a secret. It sounds like no. It sounds like it could be really tough. But once you get there, if they approach it with an open mind, you have reasonable success in selling it.
Yeah, our conversion rates. Really solid. And part of the trick is like attorneys are getting sold to all day, every day.
Yeah.
People want to make money on lawyers and lawyers want to make money as well. We prefer to have the lawyers make money. So we don't do sales pitches. We don't do cold calls. It's a consultative approach.
So startup, how long have you been at this now?
I'd say 1.75 years.
1.75 years. What advice, if any, would you have to offer some folks out there that may be looking at launching a startup? Let's see if we can't learn from you and avoid some pitfalls.
Yeah, you need to do kind of a self-inventory. It's an extraordinarily challenging job. It's one of the more challenging jobs in business, and business is challenging. So you have to have the attitude and also the aptitude. People will go into a startup and probably after 1 month they'll realize that, you know, startup life isn't for them because it's insane. It's extraordinarily high risk. You have to be high energy and you have to be willing to turn on a dime because that's what a startup is. That's our advantage. We don't have the money. We've got talent, but our ability, our greatest selling point and our greatest competitive advantage is we can pivot. We can pivot really fast, and that's the secret to a successful startup.
So being nimble and being able to adjust to what the market tells you?
Yeah.
And having an Anita.
You need any?
You got to have an Anita.
Can you share an example of that maybe in your maybe an iteration of this adjusted based on what you learned from a law firm?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, here's a really basic example.
First, you were going after doctors.
We thought about doctors, but then we read some of the AMA regulations. Yeah, well, look, Anita, you want to talk mm-hmm. about Case Current or what?
You know, originally when we started, it was just one, you know, very simple idea on how we can refer cases on
right.
on Case Current, and then you know.
So you got feedback from actual law firm.
Law firm, and then we get approach from even nonprofit group on how we can use Case Current to help nonprofit
right.
organizations.
Yeah, and we pitched our MVP to people that weren't lawyers but worked in the nonprofit sector doing, you know, legal advocacy, And their entire reaction was, it was just crickets. They didn't get it at all. And at first, I was a little irritated because, you know, that at that point, that had been a year of my life. Right. But we realized that you have to communicate a brand very differently to different people. And we had the features that they wanted, but we didn't express in a way that made sense to them.
Right.
But we got back to the office. We pivoted like madmen.
Like ballerinas.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Don Draper doing a pirouette. And we were able to get back to them. We were able to close the deal. So.
Oh, so you took what they were asking for and were able to kind of rejigger your thing to... It was probably similar to what it always was, but you kind of communicated a little clearer to them in a way that they can understand it.
And that's one of a pivot doesn't necessarily mean you have to redo code or roll out a new product. You have to find a way to package it.
That's how you sell. You go out into the marketplace, you sell them whatever they want, and then you come back to the shop and say, okay, Stone, we got to build this thing. I just sold it. You sold what? So are you guys still in search of funding, or are you good? You good on the funding side?
Oh, every startup in the world is in search of funding.
Yeah?
I love funding.
How much you need? We got the next guest is loaded. He wrote his own book.
He wrote a book.
I like getting funded more. I don't like funding. I like getting funded.
I don't like getting investigated by the SEC for a public offering. So we'll talk later.
All right. So, but you're at that stage where you actually are in search of some funding, and so that's going to be an exciting time for you.
It's exciting. It's terrifying, and I don't sleep nearly enough, but it's worth it because this is one of the few things you can do professionally where you just get to do what you love, and that's beautiful.
Right, and you started from a blank page, and you can see what the end looks like, and you just got to convince other people it looks like that.
Yeah, and that takes work, but if you've got it in you, you've got it.
I think this is fantastic. It's a very inspiring conversation. And as you observe, just hanging out with people of this mindset is rejuvenating for old men like us.
It's good to see committed people passionately.
It is good to see committed, passionate people.
Aggressively going for their goal.
I'm 27 going on 100, I'd say.
Before we let you go, a couple of things. First of all, tell us a little bit more about this ATDC thing. How do you get involved with that? What's been your experience? And what advice, if any, do you have for people who might want to navigate that world?
Well, ATDC is pretty much kind of the Southeastern startup hub for tech entrepreneurs. ATDC, it's run by Georgia Tech. It's called the Advanced Technology Development Center. It's in Technology Square. It's pretty much kind of like the nexus for everything startup in Atlanta. It's really well integrated with TAG. That's the Technology Association of Georgia. ATDC, their mission is to help technology entrepreneurs, and they do it extraordinarily well. Over 30 years, I think in the report they mentioned that their companies have raised over $1 billion in private capital.
Wow.
That's extraordinary for the Southeast. And so they're just dedicated. They really want to make you succeed. Get involved. Go to every event you can. Talk to people. Walk into startup offices. We don't stop talking. We're chatterboxes. You can learn a lot.
Fantastic. And how can our listeners get in touch with you, learn more about Eggplanter, and have a substantive conversation with you about some of these services and this technology?
Well, yeah. Okay. Well, our website is eggplanter.com. So it's eggplant with an E-R on the end.com. And you can find contact information there. If you want to show up, hey, I guess we'll be there. We might be selling, but yeah, we like to talk to as many people as possible. And we love what we do, and we like to network with people who love what they do as well.
So the people that you're looking for is lawyers, law firms, any size law firm?
Sure, yeah, definitely.
And what pain are they having that they would want you to solve?
Weak client pipeline. Inefficient case screenings, and no cross-selling between lawyers in the same firm.
All right. So if you're hurting out there, any lawyers, give Eggplanter a call.
Fantastic. Jason Dyer, Anita Fong with Eggplanter. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you.
Pleasure.
How about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
I'm not going anywhere.
All right.
Fantastic. Next up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning is a gentleman who has been with us before, no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone, Lee. He has just released a new book called Stand in the Heat. Please welcome, if you will, Mr. Glenn Carver. Hey, man.
How are you doing?
I am doing well and so excited to see this book. This is fantastic. You got to tell us right out of the box, what in the world compelled you to write a book?
A lot of fear.
Yeah?
Fear, anxiety.
Did you think
real world
book,
stuff?
Book shortage.
Book shortage. If you recall my first book, it was a mock book and it had nothing on the pages.
I do recall. I got to tell our listeners this. And some of you may remember, so because I believe it was the High Velocity Radio Show that you were on when we had this conversation. Glenn was in the studio. It's been months, several months ago, and he comes in with this book. And
it looks just like this book.
It looks just like this book. He comes in with this book. And he starts telling us a little bit about it. We don't talk about it on air, not much, I don't think. And you're thumbing through it, and there's nothing in the pages.
This one has more things in between.
This one
pages.
Is a little more substantive than the first edition, I must say. But this guy actually went to the trouble and expense of having a book made. I'm not going to tell him why. Why did you do that, and what impact did it have on the project?
Well, thanks. Great question. The spirit of this book is rooted in our founding fathers, I believe. At my core, that our founding fathers were the greatest entrepreneurs in the history of civilization, and I think a lot of us have forgotten that. But the vision for this book was born on February 2nd, 2010. At the time, I was 42 years old, had a three-month-old firstborn son at home, and I was stuck in rush hour traffic on I-75 South, headed to an appointment, and had a bank account at the time that was on absolute vapors. And a little bit of stress rolling through my head.
I'll bet.
A little bit of anxiety. If I were completely transparent, I would just tell you I was scared. And as I looked around in my car at everybody else stuck in traffic, I realized that there are probably more people standing in the heat financially right now than at any time in our lifetime, probably since the Great Depression. And I thought to myself, self, maybe this is your brand. Maybe this is the book you've been looking for, the message, the platform, if you will. And unlike this great entrepreneur, Jason Dyer, sitting next to me, I've never started a business from scratch and built it into something huge. But what if I go interview people who have and tell their story? So that's when the idea was born. I had the privilege of interviewing 14 great men and women, 7 men, 7 women, just about their stories, their trials, their tribulations, the ups and downs, just the reality of entrepreneurship and what it's about. And it ain't easy. And it can be mean, tough, and nasty. And I think what I've got here is a survival guide for entrepreneurs, and not because of me. I think it's a really good book because of the wisdom and the lessons that have been learned from these great entrepreneurs, and I've got it in a package now. You can open it up and see there's really words inside.
I think that's fantastic. So I know one of the things that you address is mistakes that entrepreneurs make. And would love for you to share one or two of those. I think that would be very enlightening for our listeners. And then I am always interested in a mistake maybe that you made somewhere in this process and what you feel like you learned from it. So can we have like the mistake segment?
Absolutely. Yeah, the mistakes are rampant. I mean, first and foremost, entrepreneurs are way underfunded. 80% of all startups go belly up within the first 5 years. And then after 10 years, it's like 90% or 99.99%. So being underfunded, having too large of a vision without a plan in place. And really, a lot of entrepreneurs don't have a coach. They don't have a business coach. Mm-hmm. They don't because we are very confident, we feel like we don't need accountability and we don't need partnership and guidance. And I would say most entrepreneurs need a coach, need accountability. We don't want it, but we need it.
And then for you in this process, a mistake that you made that and what you feel like you learned from it?
Wow. This book for me was very challenging from a belief standpoint and from a discipline standpoint. Anybody in this room besides me struggle with discipline?
A little bit.
I mean, I'm inherently lazy. Most of us are. This book took 27 months. I thought I could do it in 12. But, starting a Sandler training business and having a new family and trying to do all this on the side, lots of early hours, lots of 5 a.m. mornings and lots of writing on the weekends. But I would have been more disciplined about my behavior.
Now, when you were going through the process of interviewing these successful people and you were picking up kind of the core points and principles that you learned at the end of this, were you able to implement some of their wisdom in your process to help you get to the finish line?
Oh, absolutely. And I've got really, this book is a process. It's a three-step process that I've gleaned from a lot of the entrepreneurs that I interviewed. But really how I kept my head on straight and how I kept my wits about me and kept my attitude straight as I was standing in the heat was, number one, So we all, most of us live in a gap. We're a gap between where we are and where we want to be, whether it's in our personal life or business life or, you know, our relationships or our waistline. But first and foremost, you got to manage your emotions, specifically release the fear. You know, fear holds us back. Fear kills our dreams. So you've got to manage your emotions on a moment-to-moment basis. Not once a week, not once a month, on a moment-to-moment basis, fear can creep into our thinking. That's step number one. Step number two is we have to visualize our outcome. Very crystal clear. Most people don't get what they want in life because of fear, and they're not crystal clear about their outcome. And that's why the first thing I did when I had the vision for this book was I had the cover made so I could sell the dream to myself.
I think that's great.
Right. And potential
imagine
interviewees.
Imagine if you would have filled the pages with words, then maybe it wouldn't have taken
well, if you remember, if you remember, the first the mock book was Everything Men Know About Women.
Right.
It's completely empty. So I took the mock book, I took it into Barnes & Noble, I put it on the bestseller stand at Barnes & Noble, I took a picture, then I put it on my vision board.
Wow. You took the book that we were talking about that you had months ago, you walked into a Barnes & Noble, you put it on the bestseller shelf.
And right before he was kicked out.
Right before I was kicked out, I snapped it and I ran.
He's barred in 50 states, right, from the Barnes & Noble.
Right.
That's fantastic.
Well, you know, I love the story of Jim Carrey. You know who Jim Carrey is?
Yes. Oh, yeah, the Grinch.
Yes, of course. There was a time.
I have kids.
Yes. There was a time when he was a struggling actor, comedian out in L.A. He was completely broke. But what he was smart enough to do was he would drive his hoopty car up into the canyons of L.A., and he wrote himself a check, true story, wrote himself a check in the amount of $10 million. And in the fourth section, he wrote for acting services rendered. And he would sit in his car, and he would visualize. He would create this holographic vision, if you will. He would feel what it was going to be like someday to have that check written to him. 5 years later, it happened. So he very, very clearly visualized his outcome. And then step three is taking massive action. Got to take massive action.
Well, and I suspect that's where the gap is for a lot of folks, right? They pay for the seminar, and they get a new shirt at Walmart, and they head down to the place on Saturday, they listen to the motivational speaker, and they go do some of this visioning stuff, right?
Correct.
They put stuff on the mirror and all that, but they don't take any action, much less
right.
massive
and they're
action.
Waiting for that phone to ring with somebody to ready
is
to get
is that your
the
experience?
Check.
Is that what happens to so many people? They just don't take the action, or they take a little action for a little while, and if they don't get immediate results, then they...
Yeah, a little action for a little while. Behavior change is long-term. It doesn't happen quickly. You know, you hear that people are overnight success stories or 20 years in the making. I'm 45. I've been studying entrepreneurship and business and these great thinkers since I was 21. So I say this book happened in 27 months, but maybe it was 20 years.
Or maybe it was 47 years.
Maybe it was, yeah.
Anything surprise you in these interviews? There's got to be some very interesting people that you were interviewing.
Yeah, who were some of the interviewees?
Yeah, some incredible interviewees. Well, my first interview was George McCara, the founder of Longhorn Steakhouse.
Yeah, he's been in the studio. Great guy.
Just a phenomenal guy, and he's Ted Turner's partner at Ted's Montana Grill. As a matter of fact, I delivered his books. He bought 10 books from me last week. I delivered those to him. He's going to give
cool.
one to Ted Turner.
Nice.
So maybe he'll pick it up and look at it. That would be great. Interviewed Herman Cain, who I'm a huge fan of. He's a massive defender of the Constitution and free enterprise and limited government. Interviewed Mo Anderson, the vice chairman of Keller Williams Realty, just a brilliant woman who's helped build one of the great real estate empires on the planet. Dave Liniger, the founder of REMAX. An unbelievable entrepreneur. His story is just stunning, what he's done and the people he's helped. And
so is that balloon his? You know, that's their logo.
REMAX,
yeah.
I don't know. It might be his. You know, he tried to fly a balloon. He attempted to fly a balloon around the world.
Oh, he did. Okay.
Well, they attempted. They never made it. But just this kind of guy. He's a huge visionary thinker. Just incredible men and women that I had the chance to interview. Trish McCarty out of Phoenix, who is the founder of Starshine Academy. She's Mother Teresa with an MBA.
So they all have, I'm sure, their own idiosyncrasies, but you apparently really saw some patterns emerge, some things that you said, you know, they all do this or they all don't do this. Highlight a couple of those.
Yeah, the patterns are you've got to be willing. You know, entrepreneurs are different. As George McCara says, if you're not willing to make sacrifices, keep your day job. There's massive risk involved. There's got to up front. There's total lack of balance in your life. You got to be willing to give up some things. Otherwise, you're never going to make it. You got to be absolutely passionate about what you do. It's beyond the money. Ironically, entrepreneurship is bigger than the money. It's about your spirit and your vision. for what you're trying to create. Most entrepreneurs want to leave a legacy. They want to leave their mark on the world, not just work 9 to 5 for somebody else. It's a calling. It's the spirit of our founding fathers who created this country that gave it this opportunity.
I hear you. I gave up pro baseball. I didn't even go to tryouts.
That's it, right? You said, no, I'm going to follow my dream.
Right. That's right. I'm going to build studios.
Sacrifices.
I love you, man.
So do you have a favorite chapter? If there's only one chapter you could share with us?
It might be chapter one. I mean, I started off strong. Are you crazy? My friend Scott Goodman.
That's perfect.
I would think everybody in this room is probably a little bit crazy. You got to be crazy to try to start something. And I love what Schopenhauer said, the German philosopher. And all ideas go through three stages. At first, they're ridiculed. Second, they're violently opposed. And third, they're accepted as self-evident. But if you're doing something new, you've got to be willing to be called crazy, and probably by the people closest to you, friends and family. We're all a little crazy. We all walk that fine line between sanity and crazy.
Now, you suggest right there on the back cover that you have some insight into how to remain calm, cool, and collected while all this heat is around you. What are some strategies for remaining? The word that we say around here is moosa. I got that off of the Bad Boys movie, right?
That's right.
So that's a stone strategy, but are there some others that maybe you employ?
Yeah, I would say staying in that gap between stimulus and response. When something happens, don't react immediately. That's great advice from Herman Cain as well. Stay in that gap. When something happens, don't freak out immediately. Think. Think before you react. Personally, I think physiology is huge. Whenever I'm walking down a hall, I walk down the hall with purpose. I walk quickly. I'm always intentionally smiling. I'm always maintaining my physiology because that directly impacts your attitude. Working out is an excellent idea. Haven't been doing enough of that lately.
See, I maintain it's an excellent idea, too. And
You just maintain it's an excellent idea.
Well, not only that, I pay the fat tax every month. My credit card gets hit every month for the bill at the Y, and I haven't darkened that door in months. Now, you're a sales guy.
I am.
How do you go about selling a book? How do you make money off of this
I'm
thing?
Leaving
or
that
is
up
that
to
the
you.
Objective?
That's why I'm here.
That's it.
Get on the radio. Uh-huh. No,
well,
that's a big part of the job. You can't just write it anymore, right?
Sure. Yeah. The hard part's over. The fun begins. I'm ultimately a sales guy. Ultimately, I'm a speaker. It hasn't even hit me yet that now I'm an author. But this book was written to, first and foremost, encourage people to become entrepreneurs, especially our younger people. As George McCare said, if more young people don't become more involved in entrepreneurship, this is going to be an ugly situation. But I'm a speaker first and foremost, so looking for speaking engagements where I can get the word out, sell books after the speaking engagement. Had a great thrill 2 weeks ago. Got an opportunity to speak at Vistage, thanks to Jansen Chazanov.
Oh, cool. Good for
and,
you.
After the talk, people walked up to me and gave me money for my book and asked me to sign it. It was phenomenal.
Nice.
It was an incredible experience.
Doing good work is just a fantastic sales tool, isn't it?
It really is.
So,
it really is.
So they tell me, and I suspect over time, if it's not happening already, it wouldn't surprise me at all if you command more engagements and higher fees after having authored a book.
Yes, that's the idea. That's my intention.
That's terrific.
Now, this book, though, isn't a one-off, right? Isn't this a kind of the kickoff to a series?
Yeah, thank you, Lee. It's a series. I started with entrepreneurs because I feel, at my core, I'm an entrepreneur. I appreciate entrepreneurs. I felt like reaching out to entrepreneurs, they would reach their hand down and help up a new guy. But this is a series. When it's branded properly, I believe that I can write multiple books. I'm thinking about the second book being Lessons from Former Fortune 100 CEOs. Guys like Jack Welch or, people like that who have been at the corporate level, at the highest level, but they're retired. They want to give back. They have the time. Maybe a Herb Kelleher who founded Southwest. I mean, what a stud. Some of the incredible female CEOs who are on the planet and would love to give back. I've got an idea for a book about direct sales, particularly multi-level marketing. Interview 12 of the top earners on the planet about how they've built their business. Maybe for performance athletes, been meeting some of these folks lately who are Ironmen and cancer survivors and just, branding this. I've been massively motivated and inspired by Chicken Soup for the Soul, what Mark Victor Hansen and Jack Canfield did. That's my real inspiration. Just want to bring great content to the world.
So how can our listeners get in touch with you and learn more and maybe engage you to do some speaking and buy boxes and boxes of books?
Yeah, pallets. That would be great.
Pallets of books.
That's it. That's the only way we sell books.
That's
by the
right.
Pallet. By the pallet, by
the
truckload.
What's the best way to get to you?
Yes, standintheheat.com. All contact information is there. Got a promotional video, working on my demo reel for speaking. And we didn't cover, HEAT isn't an acronym. HEAT stands for honor, enthusiasm, action, and tenacity. Four characteristics that are essential for entrepreneurship. And I'm just honored to be here again. I really appreciate you guys, and thank you for your time. Thanks for having me in.
Oh, we're delighted, man. It's fantastic, and I'm inspired. I want you to go through the acronym one more time. Honor.
Honor, enthusiasm, action, and tenacity.
Wow. I think if you got all those, you probably get something accomplished.
I think so.
You need to squeeze capital in there somewhere. But
then it would be cheat, so you don't want to do that.
That'd be a great
Unbelievable.
Book.
Unbelievable. We'll leave the C off.
You had a lot of great book ideas, but you didn't say anything about washed up radio host, because we have a lot of time too.
That's number six. That's number six.
Well, thanks for coming down and joining us, man. You got to come back, and I think it might be fun to have him come back with a client that he's spoken for and get some insight into the kind of impact it's had on the organization. You'd be up for that at some point?
Absolutely. It'd be fantastic.
Or maybe we'll send you out there to visit with all those lawyers that Jason and Anita stir up for you.
It's going to be a lot of them, I'm sure.
We got like a big round table, right? Fun stuff. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, our guests this morning, Jason Dyer, Anita Fong, and Mr. Glenn Carver, and everyone here with the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.